From the dim light of an open port, Pitt could just barely make out the name on the welded letters on the bow. Deep Encounter. Giordino gazed upward. How do we get aboard without a gangplank or a ladder? We don't. Naturally, you have an alternate plan. Pitt's slight grin was lost in the darkness. The hijacker's ship is smaller. We can probably go over the stern, then work our way on board Deep Encounter. He'd guessed right. The pirate's vessel was no sailing ship bristling with muzzle-loading guns, but a 135-foot utility workboat, whose stern was not only low enough for them to struggle aboard, but showed them all the consideration in the world by providing a diver's boarding ladder and a small platform. He was in the act of climbing over the stern railing when Giordino's fingers dug into his arm. "Someone's standing in the shadows by the aft deckhouse smoking a cigarette." Giordino spoke softly in Pitt's ear. Quiet as a wraith, Giordino climbed over the stern railing, padded silently across the deck, and hooked those big hands around the man's neck, cutting off all air to the lungs. There was a brief struggle, and then the body went limp. With only a slight whisper of sound, he dragged the hijacker back to the stern and behind a large winch. Pitt searched through the man's clothing, discovering a large folding knife and a snub-nosed revolver. "We're in business," he proclaimed. Without another word, they crossed the expansive cargo and work deck at a steady, unhurried pace. They halted before coming to the gangplank between the two ships and sneaked a look inside one of the ports that had a light issuing through it. Pitt counted 22 of the hijackers sitting around in a large mess room playing cards, reading, or watching satellite television. There were enough guns stacked around to start a revolution. Again, they moved soundlessly across the deck before Pitt suddenly stopped. He pointed to the wide patch of painted cardboard that was crudely taped on the side of the superstructure. "Let's see what they're hiding." Slowly, he peeled off the duct tape that held the cardboard on the metal side. He could just discern the stylized image of a three-headed dog with a serpent for its tail. Directly beneath was the word Cerberus. It meant nothing to him, so he pushed the cardboard cover back in place and retaped it. "See anything?" Giordino asked. "Enough." They continued to the gangplank and stepped over the water onto the deck of the survey ship. Now Pitt was on home ground. He could easily make his way along the decks of the Deep Encounter blindfolded. He went into the communications room and picked up the Global Star phone and dialed Sandecker's cell phone number. Time was too short for Pitt to say anything vague to throw off anyone homing in on the call. He gave the Admiral a brief, concise report on finding the Deep Encounter and gave its exact location. "My crew and scientific team?" asked the Admiral, as if they were members of his immediate family. "The issue is still in doubt," answered Pitt, repeating Major Devereaux's famous message just before the fall of Wake Island. "I will contact you when I have a positive answer." Then he closed the connection. As they dropped down to the engine and generating room, Pitt was beginning to believe his worst fears were realized by the total lack of security guards. They should have been standing watch over their prisoners, if indeed there was still anyone on board to imprison. And then there was the absence of lights. Guards would not sit around in darkness. Finally, they came to the door to the engine and generating room. From 10 feet away, they could hear the faint murmur of voices. Their eyes met for a brief instant. The voices seemed to be taunting and heavy with scorn. Pitt pushed the long metal door handle a fraction of an inch. He made a mental note to thank Chief Engineer House for having the hatch door latches oil periodically. He eased the handle downward with infinite slowness, and when it stopped, he gently cracked open the door. He heard the voices clearly now. Two came from strangers. The other two were as familiar as his own.
"Won't be long now, and the whole lot of you will see what it's like to drown," one of the hijackers was saying. "Yeah," said his partner nastily. Your head feels like it's being filled with exploding firecrackers. Your eyes pop from your head. Your lungs feel like they're being swabbed with nitric acid. You'll have a blast.
You sick scum, spat Captain Birch. Talking like that in front of women only proves that you're nothing but a bunch of degenerate animals, came the voice of Chief Engineer House.
Hey, Sam, did you know you were a degenerate? Not since last week.
He paused and looked beyond Pitt's vision.
Our crew should be coming aboard in another half hour. 2 hours after that, you Numa people will get to study all them denizens of the deep at first hand.
From his limited view through the crack in the hatch, Pitt could see that the hijackers were holding automatic weapons in the ready position. He nodded at Giardino. Both men crouched forward and prepared for a fight as they opened the door and walked in the engine room shoulder to shoulder. The two hijackers sensed the movement behind them, but they didn't bother to turn, thinking it was their friends. The one called Sam said,
"You guys are early. What's the rush?"
"We've been ordered to set a course for Guam,"
said Giardino, in a reasonably good imitation of the hijacker with the gravelly voice.
"That's it," said Sam, laughing. "You people better start praying. It's almost time to meet your maker."
That was as far as he got. Giardino picked him up off the deck by his head and smashed it against a bulkhead as Pitt whipped his .45 in a sidearm swing against the other guard's jaw, sending him crumpling in a heap on the deck.